Hey guys, real quick before we jump into this next episode, I want to discuss something with you. I made a decision a couple of years ago not to bombard this podcast with tons of ads or just bombard you with sponsorship. Nothing would drive me more crazy when listening to other podcasts when the first 5 minutes were nothing but ads. So I worked hard not to do that to you. I try to keep the ads to a minimum and keep the podcast as streamlined as possible. So do me a favor. Go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Buy yourself a bag. Up your shooting game. You're going to thank me. And if you're not a rifle hunter, go buy yourself a glassing pad. Your butt is going to thank me after spending hours behind the glass. They're awesome. If you use promo code John Stallone, all one word, you'll save 20%. And lastly, please, I know you heard me say it, iTunes, Podbean, go leave us a review. I need the feedback. The ratings help me reach more people, and it helps me keep this free. So do me a favor, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags, and go leave us a review. Thank you. Let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to do a little storytelling session, a little follow-up with my buddy Joel Turner. Joel used to be on the podcast all the time. We used to have him on all the time, and it's been a couple years, man.
Right.
How's it going?
Going well.
Yeah.
Do well.
Yeah. I can imagine. Blacktail's like my Moby Dick.
Yeah, it's your nemesis critter, huh?
My white whale. Yeah, that. And I don't know, man. Now it's my third time going for Roosevelt's and my third time getting skunked, too. So.
Or which state are you hunting?
I was hunting Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah. The last 2 years I hunted with Shannon Hobbs and Corey Ford, the Anger Spike guys. Yeah. Awesome dudes.
Yeah, they're about the best in the business as far as Roosevelt comes.
Yep. Yeah, so it's I just keep getting shitty weather, the first time I came up there, I hunted in Washington on the Olympic Peninsula.
Oh my gosh!
And I had opportunities, man. I should have shot the first bull the first night. I had what I consider a raghorn, and I didn't know any better. I feel like I've told the story 100 times, but I got like, we were doing like a drop camp type deal. So the outfitter provided the camp and food and whatnot, and then just said, here's a map, go for it, So I really didn't get a whole lot of direction or whatever, and I didn't know. I mean, I knew what Pope and Young was, and that was what was in the back of my head. So I passed up a bull on the first evening that I shouldn't have. I had at 30 yards. I drew on him. I shot him in my head, and I let him go because in my head he was a raghorn. So
right.
Didn't know. Now today, had I had that same bull standing in front of me, I would have shot the heck out of it.
Right.
So, and then I had another opportunity. It was a little bit out of the range that I wanted to shoot an elk at least at that time. I've actually killed elk at further than that now, but I don't know, just at the time with the equipment I was using and so on and so forth, I let it go. I'm getting a lot of noise on your end. There's
I don't know,
popping and stuff. So yeah, you were just telling me about a buck that you had out on your property or your neighbor's property that you're gonna head after.
Yeah, she hates the deer over there, and just to get a blacktail in the daylight is a chore around this place. So she called me up this morning and said, there's a nice buck in her yard. So I called my wife, she's on her way home. And, hopefully after this podcast, we're going to go, get some blacktail meat.
I wish my wife was that excited about it. I mean, she'll go, but
yeah,
I doubt she'd drop what she was doing. Especially definitely not leave work.
Well, she knows how hard I work to get these blacktails out in the daylight, and it's just such a rare occurrence. They're so nocturnal, it drives me insane. So,
Yeah, well, blacktail are my nemesis. They're my white whale. So
yeah,
yeah. I've mostly hunted them in California. I've only hunted once in Washington. Well, technically twice, because I had a deer tag when I was Roosevelt elk hunting there.
Okay.
But I really wasn't focused. I actually had an opportunity at one. I was a little thick. I didn't want to take it to the shop, but I bet you I probably would have gotten them.
Yeah.
And then I had an opportunity on a really good buck, like a 125.
Oh.
Good, clean 4x4. And he came in, and I had just a frontal shot.
Mm-hmm. And
I was like, okay, he's going to turn. And when he goes to turn, I'm going to shoot him.
Yeah.
He did one of those like...
Inside out, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what? Man. And it came and went just like that.
They are a tough critter to get, especially with a bow, for sure.
The Pacific Northwest is turning out to be unfriendly to me. I've been 3 times now for Roosevelt and got skunked. And
yeah.
Like I said, well, mostly California, but I haven't got my blacktail. So, yeah.
Yeah, one of these days. It's tough just knowing where these deer are, and they don't eat any agriculture. So, you know, you can bait deer here in Washington, but they only eat apples and wet cob. That's all they eat. They don't eat corn. They eat things that are very expensive or very hard to get. So... It's difficult all around, for sure.
Yeah, I had an opportunity. I was going to go hunt. I was invited to hunt in an old apple orchard.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Going, and I have a feeling that had I went, I definitely would have been able to fill my blacktail.
Yeah.
It was right there in the southern part of Washington. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. That would have been good.
Yeah, so.
For sure.
It is what it is.
Yep.
One of these days, I'll catch up. I'll catch up with one and bring them home with me.
I have no doubt, buddy.
So, tell us about this stud bull you got, man. That was that day when you sent me the picture when you got him. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, the bulls, and specifically, they have a gene pool up there that's very similar to the gene pool around my house here in Eatonville, where it's a Cascade Roosevelt. So you're just west, or you're just east of I-5. So it's not record book wise, it's not considered a true Roosevelt, but the elk were brought there in the 1930s, I believe, from Wyoming, and they were crossed with Roosevelts. Oh. And it just makes for an elk that has an immense body and mass in the antlers is just incredible. So it's a very unique type of bull. And I just love them. They've got super dark red antlers, and they're just incredible. So I've been putting in for this tag for 14 years. Because here in Washington, it's a point system, but it's not like Arizona, where a certain number of tags go to the top point holders. You just get points, and that puts your name in the hat that many more times. So I guess it increases your odds, but it's still not great. So, I've been putting in for 14 years, put in with my hunting partner Seth this year, and we both drew the tag. There was only 7 tags in the area, and you actually get a key to the private logging company that has most of that ground, and you get that key 10 days before season, so you're able to go up and do some scouting and such. And so we went and did some scouting, and luckily my sergeant at work had that tag last year, so I had some boots on the ground. So I had a couple of starting points, but we found a lot more ground when we went and scouted it this year. So it was awesome. So we get in there, and on the first day, it actually starts earlier than most Washington seasons. So it started on the 26th of August, and our normal season this year started on the 7th of September. So 26th of August, I was able to take Bodie with me, and he was my cameraman. So we went in and got in on a pretty nice herd bull, had a ton of cows, slipped in on his cows, did the bull calling cows bugle. He comes right into 23 yards, but he came into a place where I was not expecting him to. He almost scaled a cliff to get up to us. And Bodhi got to take pics and film the whole thing of the bull doing the Matrix move on me. I did a very rookie mistake that I tell people about all the time. I had a new product, a new call case that I had strapped to my pack strap, and that you can put your mouth reeds in. So I had that on, and when I pulled my bugle tube around to do my bull call and cow's bugle, normally when I let that go, it swings down to my side out of the way of my bowstring. So when I did the bull call and cow's bugle on this bull, he comes in to my right, which I was not expecting. So I had to shift my body. And when I did that, I had previously let my bugle tube go, but it didn't swing because it got wrapped up on that new call case that I had on my pack strap. Okay. So when I draw my bow back on this bull, that's at 23 yards broadside standing there, my bowstring hits my bugle tube and it's pushing my bugle tube against my neck. So I'm not able to actually get the full draw. I'm thinking, you rookie. Man, I mean, that is such a rookie mistake, but new products that I hadn't tested yet, and that was my fault totally. So I'm trying to push my bugle tube out of the way with my bowstring, and it's not happening because it's wrapped up. The cord is wrapped up in this call case. So I have to let my bow down, basically rip my tube around my body, and then draw back. Meanwhile, Bodie's wondering what the hell Dad's doing. So when I finally shoot at this bull, it's been looking at us for like, I don't know, 20 seconds. It's been watching the show of me and Bodhi in the nightmare that's about to unfold. So he's like a coiled spring. When I let that arrow go, he ducks and whirls towards me, and so much so that the arrow almost hits him in the face.
Oh, shit.
And it goes right underneath his right ear and right just skips off the hump in his back. So that was my first experience, and I was kind of hoping to get a bull with Bodhi to show him the whole experience, you know, but of course the old man missed. So that one didn't happen. Then I went to Oregon and guided for, I think 4 days. I had to guide for 4 days down there, and my hunter killed a bull. And then, so I zoomed back up here just to get back up into the Nooksack unit. And so Seth and I were up there September 5th. I got in on a bull, pretty nice 6x6, really heavy. All these bulls up there are just known for their mass. I mean, they're such cool elk. And this thing is losing his mind, screaming. He's got all these cows down on this flat in the jack furs, which is really thick stuff. I knew where he was, so I slid down there, and I got in beside him, and I knew he was in this jack fur patch, but I didn't know exactly where. So, and I can't see anything in there. It's so thick. So I jumped up on an old cedar stump. And so my feet are like 5 feet in the air now. So I'm standing on this cedar stump, and I knock an arrow because I know he's there somewhere, but I don't know exactly where. I hit him with a bull call and cow's bugle, and this thing is bedded 20 yards from me. And he bugles back and just about blows me off that stump. I'm like, holy mackerel, he's right there. And I see the antlers come up, and I can just see antler tips, and he's coming right at me, and he's going to be at 5 yards. So he's coming around the last jack fur. I draw back. As soon as I see that tip of his nose, I draw my bow back. And so I'm at full draw. His whole head comes into view. His neck, it just starts into the color change on his shoulder. And he stops.
Oh, jeez.
And he look. I mean, you can see that eyeball just kind of swivel around and look up at me. I'm like, oh, God. Because I think I'm skylined in these jackfurs right? So he looks up at me, and he just fades. He just backpedals, right? Just as smooth as he walked out, he smoothly just backpedaled and disappeared. And he whirled around and came up 20 yards from me. And I had one little hole in the jackfurs to shoot. And I shot a good arrow, but my arrow, it was not the hole that I thought it was. My arrow didn't even make it to him. So I killed the jack fur on that one at 20 yards. And things were starting to happen. And so a couple days later on the 7th, Seth missed a big 6x8 that I calf called in. This bull came from a long ways in a beautiful timber patch, but Seth was holding his bow for over a minute. And he shot right over the back, which is uncharacteristic of my hunt partner. He usually, I mean, he shot a controlled shot, but he was shaking like a like a dog crapping tax, I think. So not from nerves. He's pretty stone cold killer, but he was holding that bow for a long time. And so he shot right over the back of that one.
Compound or
compound, yeah. So he shoots a compound bear bow because I told him that I wouldn't make any elk sounds for him anymore if he had a sight on his bow, because he's missed numerous monster bulls that I've called in for him because of sticks and limbs. So I told him that he has to shoot bear bow just so he can see his trajectory path. And since he's done that, he's killed some monsters with me. But yeah, that was my little ultimatum there. But I can't seem to get him into a stick bow, but he does pretty well with his compound bear bow. But so we got to talking with some fellows, because there's a lot of Native American tags that are in that unit as well. And they get to actually hunt them with a rifle while we're bow hunting, which is unfortunate, but it is what it is. So I was working a bull in this jack fir patch, and a truck full of Native Americans came around the corner, and we got to talking, and I knew these guys. I grew up with these guys, right? I mean, I grew up the younger guy. I literally went to school with him for years, high school, and so we got to talking, and I've shot bows with his dad since I was probably 15 years old. So we got to talking, and there's this old boy in the back seat that's just not saying much, right? So, you know, we're up there BSing about good old times, and this guy in the back seat says, "Hey, I got a couple of things to tell you." I'm like, "Okay." So he says, "You know, usually when we come and drive up on somebody, they're pretty pissed off, but you weren't so pissed off, so I got some things to share." Well, this guy had been in this unit for 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And he used to run hounds in there when hounds were legal, so he knew every road grade, every horse trail, everything. And so he starts sharing some information with me. And we'd been hearing this bull way down by the river, but we couldn't figure out how to get to him because it's an old road system that goes in there, but it's like starts 15 miles away, and there's nobody has a key to that thing. So he starts telling us about these old road grades and such that were down by the river. So Seth and I decided that we were going to go kill this bull that they call the growler, because this fella knows this bull. He's been in the same place for 4 years down by the river, but nobody gets down to him because of that road system, or you have to cross the river.
Every time you say down by the river, it makes me think of what's his name from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, there you go.
That's river.
Yeah.
The river, sorry.
So Seth and I devise this scheme, and we go down, find the old road grades, we get on the river, we cross the river, get up in there, and the old growler's not wanting to bugle. And I'm calf calling my way up through there just to get him located. And I'm calf calling, and we're moving. And I'm so confident in that sound as a location sound for just elk in general. I mean, when you do a frantic calf, lost calf sound, elk have to do something to that. They either bugle to it, they cow call to it, they move, so they snap brush, they make noise. Something happens every time that you make those calf sounds. So I'm working closer and closer, and knowing this, knowing that elk are going to do something, I know that if he's not bugling back to me or the cows aren't calling, I'm not close enough yet. They're not hearing me yet. That's how much confidence I have in that sound. So I'm working up, and I get closer and closer, and I calf call again, and a bull down the ridge bugles, and that gets the growler to bugle. So now I know where the growler's at. So we start slipping up there, and we got to go through this nightmare of a clear cut, super thick. You know how it is hunting Roosevelts.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're working our way, climbing logs, finally get up to the old road system, and I calf call again. And now his cows mew to me. So now I'm close enough. So now all the cows are losing their mind up there because I've done this lost calf sound. So they we start working in closer. And if you can imagine this, the clear cut's a big clear cut, but it's in a horseshoe pattern.
Okay.
Like an upside down horseshoe where the points are down, right? The points point toward the road, okay? The middle of the horseshoe is a giant cedar grove. I'm talking 3 to 4 foot at the butt cedars. And so we get to this cedar grove, and we start up in there because the bull is at the top of the horseshoe working those cows, and he's growling and glunking and doing all kinds of cool sounds, some of which I've never even heard from an elk before. And so we're slipping up into this cedar grove, and I'm looking at Seth going, this is like a gift from God, because there is no vegetation in this cedar grove. It's bare dirt.
Oh, that's awesome.
That bull has lived in there for at least 4 years. And I mean, it's like walking on cotton. So we're slipping up through there, and we know exactly how we're going to call this bull in. We're going to get close to his cows. We're going to do the bull calling cows bugle, and he's going to come try to kill us, right? Well, little did we know how true that was. So we slide up in there. We get what we think is about 50 yards from him. I look at Seth. Seth knocks an arrow. I knock an arrow, because Seth's got the tag too, so we're good to – we like to double punch these bulls if we get a chance.
Right, right.
And so I look at him. I said, are you ready? And he says, yeah, I'm ready. So, I mean, we've done this so many times together that we just know how each other's going to react. We know what the bull's going to do. It's just – it's like clockwork. So we get set, and there's literally – no vegetation between us and the edge of the clear cut. So I let loose with that bull calling cows bugle, and all I hear is brush breaking. I see cows like literally falling to the side. They're tripping and going nuts because the bull was coming down through there, and he was throwing cows to the side with his antlers.
Oh my God.
Now I can't see the bull yet. All I see is elk going to the sides. I'm like, what in the hell is happening? And I look over at Seth, and he draws his bow back. And I'm like, what the hell are you drawing your bow back for? We can't even see this thing yet. We just got burned yesterday because you drew your bow too early, right? And you were holding forever. So all this is going through my head, and I look back forward, and this thing rounds the corner around this root wad that I couldn't see him, but Seth could see him coming in. And this thing comes around the corner at 30 yards. I'm like, oh my God, that thing is a monster, right? Because I'm just looking at these giant fronts, ivory tips coming at me. There's nothing in between me and this bull, or Seth and I and this bull. And it's walking towards us. It gets to 20 yards. And I'm talking to Seth out loud. I'm like, just shoot him if you got a shot. And Seth and I have been in these situations quite often. And usually he shoots the bull. And I know he's already at full draw, so I'm expecting the arrow to dump into this bull at any moment. Well, the bull gets to 10 yards and sticks his antlers in the dirt and starts just throwing stuff everywhere. I mean, he obviously sees us because we're not in any cover. And he's losing his mind. He's just throwing mud and sticks and all kinds of crap all over the place at 10 yards. He's facing me, and then he would flop his body sideways, broadside, then he would face me, and he's just going all over the place. Just, I mean, he is doing the dance in front of me. I'm trying to get my bow drawn back, but I'm trying to find the window when his head is somewhat blocked or something. And because there's no vegetation, he's not hiding his eyes at all. And I'm 10 yards from this thing, and you know, my mind's racing. I'm thinking about my shot process, and I remember something that I always tell people, but you know, you have to remember your own preaching sometimes. When bulls rub trees, they close their eyes, right?
Yep.
Well, they also close their eyes when they're raking the ground with their antlers. Right. So I look at his face, and he has his eyes closed. So I'm like, perfect. So I draw my bow back, and he doesn't see it. So I draw my bow back. So now I'm at full draw. As soon as I reach anchor, he flips his body, so now he's perfectly broadside. And I'm looking down the arrow on my recurve. I'm looking down that arrow at the spot I want to hit. Everything's lined up right, and there's one stick 10 feet in front of me. I don't know where this stick came from. I have no idea. I didn't see it before, but it is right through the X on his vitals. And I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to screw this up and hit that stick. I got to make some room somehow. So what I did is I leaned back slightly. When I leaned back, I gained about 6-7 inches on the side of that stick. The way that I leaned put the stick in the front of his shoulder, basically. So it opened up the window.
Got it.
And so I'm looking down my arrow. It's a clear path now. I start through my shot process. I'm pressing on that grip sear. And everything in my being was just telling me to let the arrow go, because it's 10 yards broadside on a monster bull. I've waited my whole life for this one opportunity to shoot a bull like this. And then I said, no way. I am shooting a controlled shot no matter what. So I keep pressing on that sear, and I'm pressing on that sear, and he's broadside. And this is only taking 1 to 2 seconds probably, but of course your mind is racing. And so that sear pops, and I shoot that arrow, and it disappears through the X behind his shoulder. And I just, it's like this giant weight was lifted. It's like, I did it. And you know, all this, I did it. And the bull whirls, and Seth shoots him in the shoulder. And he whirls out and goes to about 30 yards and stands there broadside. And I can see my arrow is hanging out in the 11 ring on the other side. It's hanging by the feathers. So, I mean, it completely blew through him. And I'm thinking, well, I probably should shoot him again, you know, because we always shoot these things as many times as we possibly can, as long as we've got the shot. So he's standing there broadside at 30 yards, but he's got about an 8-inch diameter cedar tree through his vitals. And I'm thinking, well, if I can get it, you know, just tuck it past that cedar tree, it'll be another at least liver hit. And so I draw another arrow back, and I'm looking down that shaft. Everything's good. I'm pressing through that sear. The sear pops, and I shoot that arrow right into that tree. So, wow. I mean, it just, the broadhead is still there. If anybody wants to go find it, there's a Valkyrie Blood Eagle, 250 grainer, lodged in that cedar tree. So, but the bull runs off 30 yards and falls over dead. And, you know, it was quite a celebration there. So it was pretty cool. So we went, we walked over, didn't even really need a blood trail. And we walk over, I picked those big, beautiful, super dark red antlers out of the burn brush. And it was just like a dream come true, man. It was awesome. So we have to flip this thing over to get some good picks. I'm like, I've tried my whole life to shoot a bull like this. We got to get some good picks of this thing. So, but the way it was laying, it was not going to be good. So I got kind of underneath, my hands up underneath his spine, and I'm trying to push just to get his body up. But it's such a big body bull that it just was not happening. So Seth grabs onto that big old set of antlers, and he twists it to get, you know, how you got to kind of twist the head just to get the body to start rolling. And he twists those antlers around, and I'm on its back trying to push, and he slips on a stick and lets those antlers go. Watch. And they whip around and stick in my, one of the tines, it was the fourth tine on his left side, sticks in my cheek. So it whips around and just smokes me underneath my eye in the cheekbone. And which knocks me backwards. And it's so funny because Seth is a man of very few words. And a couple of words that he always says, you know, if we're both going through a big brush patch and trying to find a path or something, I'll always ask him, hey, how's it look over there? It's not good. That's all he says. It's not good. Right. So I'm on my back, and my bell has been rung, and I open my eyes. I'm like, okay, I still got two eyes. That's good. And Seth comes up over the elk, and he looks at me and goes, dude, are you all right? And I said, I stuck my finger in my cheek all the way to the cheekbone. Oh. I'm thinking, huh, that's a pretty big hole in my face. So I pull my finger out, and I look at Seth. I go, is it bad? He goes, it's not good. So it was so funny. But anyway, so the blood's gushing out of my face, but I'm on cloud nine, and we got through it. So it was pretty good. So we bone that thing out, and we start the epic 4.5 mile pack back to the truck, you know, which includes a river crossing. And I shot him at about 6:50 in the evening, and we got back to the trucks with the first load at 1 a.m. So it was pretty epic. And then the next day we went in and, had him all hung up in a tree and such there. It was pretty cool and raining that night. So we went in next day, chopped a trail in, and cut about a mile and a half off that next pack out. So, yeah, it was pretty epic.
It was raining in Washington? Go
for it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. I fucking hate that place.
Yeah, right.
Like, I think I've hunted a total of, like 20 days,
yeah,
maybe 18 days for Roosevelt.
Yeah.
I want to say 5 of those 18 were dry.
Yeah. And elk, I truly believe elk don't bugle as much in the rain because they can't hear you.
Yeah, well, Shannon said the same thing.
And you can't hear them. So it's, if you get a clear day in September, you better be in the elk woods because it's going to be happening for sure. So
I was wondering why you had a bloody face in your picture. I was like, oh, yeah. Smear blood on the side.
Yeah, everybody thinks, oh, that's you doing that little ritual thing. I'm like, no, I got stabbed in the face by this thing. It got the last lap. So now I got a really cool battle scar on my face. And so every time I look in the mirror, I'm like, yep, I did that. That was cool. So, yeah, and I still have two eyes, so I got that going for me.
Oh, that's good. You need those.
Yeah.
So what did he score?
Well, the taxidermist green scored him gross 322 and 7/8.
Oh, okay.
He's a 6x7, and he's just got incredible mass all the way. It's the bull I've been looking at.
The beans are a little short to be super high scoring, right. But the mass, man, on his, he's sick, and those crowns at the top are
fine. Oh, yeah, they're just awesome. I love those. I'd rather kill that than a 400-inch Arizona bull every day.
He's a sweet-looking bull.
Yeah, yeah.
Congrats, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you actually sent that pic to me, and I was just about to drop in on the first bugle that I heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we were in Oregon. So uh-huh. My trip was, I had three, I'm going to call them encounters. Well, the first two, Shannon, I, and my cousin Anthony, we dropped in on a small bull.
Mm-hmm.
At first, we thought he was bigger, and then we quickly found out that he was a younger bull,
mm-hmm.
just the way he was acting. I got him to about 40 yards, but, 40 yards might as well be 100 yards over there.
Right.
And Shannon did his job, was calling him up, and he just didn't want to – he didn't want to play, man. He was afraid mm-hmm. that the bull sounds we were making were bigger than his, and he didn't want to mm-hmm. get his ass kicked, but he was curious.
Yeah.
And then my cousin Anthony and I had a similar type situation with another bull. And then the second to last day, we located a bull. Well, the night before we were with Shannon, and we located a bull that he calls Patrick, that he uh-huh. was all year last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he couldn't catch up. He's just a... He's a giant puss. He gets really aggressive, and then once you get in real close, doesn't matter what you do, if you're challenging him or if you're trying to call to his cows, it doesn't uh-huh. matter. He just eventually decides, I'm going to take my cows and go.
Mm-hmm.
But we got in really close to him, but we ran out of light. So the next morning, Shannon went to go hunt another bull that he had been hunting, a real big bull.
Mm-hmm.
Hour south of where we were at, so he went into and Anthony and I went in where we left his bull, came up with a game plan, dropped in, and he was on this like real razorback ridge
mm-hmm.
that had super old growth on the north side of it, and on mm-hmm. the south side of it, it was kind of like reprod, or it mm-hmm. was like thinned. It was thinned is what it
right.
was. And we slipped in there on this, super quiet trail.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got in, I started calling. And I started originally with some cow calls and stuff mm-hmm. like that, just to see if he would answer back. And he grunted and growled a little bit down below, which let me know he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we got in closer, I switched and I started challenging him,
mm-hmm.
Which got him fired up, and he was, kept challenging me back, and he mm-hmm. came up, and then once I heard his cows,
mm-hmm.
I actually hit him with the bull calling cows bugle,
mm-hmm.
and I can hear him making noise and breaking stuff and whatever, and I...
Mm-hmm.
Anthony start raking a tree and everything, so we were mm-hmm. like playing for his cows,
mm-hmm.
and, trying to create a whole scene.
Sure.
And
came to about 50, maybe 50-ish yards. I could just see the tips of his antlers.
Okay.
These jack pines.
Uh-huh.
And his cow started leaving.
Mm.
We had the wind. I don't know why. They started just – they just kept feeding, and he just didn't, you know, want to come fight me. And I feel like if I would have closed the distance a little bit because he couldn't see me, man. It was so thick. If I would have dropped like 20, 30 yards,
right,
that noise of me coming towards him and then hit him with another bugle or whatever, I think he might have committed. But I got a little apprehensive at that point, and unfortunately wasn't able to make it happen.
So when you were doing your scene, did you put in any mature cow sounds?
Yeah, I think I did.
Okay, that's the problem. In my opinion, so I haven't done a mature cow sound in 2 years. Because we know that cows hate other cows.
Yeah, right.
Cows, right? We've talked about this before. Cows choose the bull. Yep. So they're very protective of their bull. So if you come in and you make any mature cow sounds, they're not going to let that bull go over there. So if I have now replaced all of my cow sounds with calf sounds, because that's a neutral sound. It's a, like I said, it makes elk react somehow, some way, but it doesn't make elk go away. It gives them absolutely no reason to go away from that sound. So I've just replaced everything with higher spectrum calf sounds, and I haven't had those cows try to take their bull away. So maybe think about that in the future. I mean, there's people that have killed. The person I know that's killed the most bulls of anybody I know is 58 bull elk with his bow, and he's killed almost every one of those with calf sounds.
That's awesome.
So, you know, when you get in tight, I've just watched those cows so many times. If you make an actual cow sound, they get all suspicious, their ears come up, and they just start fading off. They don't like it. And so I just have replaced all my cow sounds with calf sounds, and it's been way better for calling in. So, but if I'm in tight on a bull that I know has cows, I don't even do calf sounds. I only do calf sounds if the bull doesn't have cows or if I'm trying to relocate him. And then I just get as tight as I can and do that one bull calling cows bugle. So I don't like to do any sounds except for that if I don't have to, right? If I can keep him located, which is, you know, when you're hunting Roosevelt's, is sometimes difficult because it's so doggone thick. So.
Right. Well, yeah. See, I don't know if I told the story 100% accurately. So when we first dropped in there, first call was a bugle.
Okay.
And I had no answer.
Which bugle did you do?
I chuckled, actually.
Okay.
I came in there and I chuckled because and I had no response. And then I looked back at my cousin Anthony, and he mewed a couple of times, you know, real soft. And then I made another bugle at that point. And that's when he responded.
So, I mean, what I do with that is it's another sound that I don't ever do in the elk woods. But I mean, if you think about it, you came down on this bull and you challenged him instantly, right? So you are now the guy that's standing at the front door of the bar saying, who wants some? You haven't given that bull any reason to talk back to you, especially if he has cows. Why is he going to let you know that he's there with all his cows? So the way that I look at that is I only do sounds where I'm either talking to my own cows or I'm talking to his cows. I'm never talking to the bull. So if you go down there and you do, let's say you do a tending bugle or you do a roundup bugle, either one of those bugles or a bull calling cows bugles, any of those bugles, basically bugles without chuckles, because chuckles are a bull-to-bull communication. So if you go down there and you do a bugle without chuckles, you're either talking to his cows or you're talking to your own cows. So if you go down there and let's say you do a bull calling cows bugle and he doesn't know if you're talking to his or your own, he's going to respond to that. Or if you make cow sounds with that or calf sounds, he's now going to think you're talking to your own cows, and he's going to try to call your cows away from you, so he'll respond with a bull calling cows bugle. You know if he's talking to you, if he chuckles. If he chuckles, he's talking to you, if you've made bull sounds,
yeah.
Right? But, so that's how I approach it. I'm either talking to my own cows to get him to respond, or I'm talking to his cows to get him to come in,
right?
One of the two. So I try to simplify it a little bit. As soon as you throw out a challenge bugle, again, now you're playing with attitudes. And if that bull's not of the right attitude, he's not going to tell you where he's at. So a bit more subtle approach sometimes works equally as well. I don't ever do a sound that makes an elk leave. Every sound that I do makes them either respond or come in. And just depending on what I need them to do, if I just need them to respond, then I'll do certain sounds, right? That's where I'm hitting with those calf, lost calf sounds. If I need a bull to bugle back to me in the middle of the day, if I'm just doing a cold location, then I'm going to do a breeding scene. I'm going to do lost calf sounds, tending bugles, and glunking. I'm talking to my own calf, right?
Right.
Therefore, I haven't done any mature cow sounds that would make a cow go away. Cows are going to want to call back to that calf, so I start with those lost calf sounds, and then if I need to, I'll add that bull. And usually, as soon as you add any type of tending sound, that'll get that bull to bugle no matter what time of day it is.
Oh, you know what? I was actually talking to Shannon about that when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I played it for him because I have a sound on my Fox Pro.
Okay.
It's called the tending bugle.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably the most killer, and I've been trying to learn it. I've been trying to mimic it. It's such a weird sound.
Mm-hmm.
Or like it's just a weird cadence of it.
Right.
And there's never been a time, well, I mean, of course I have no way of knowing this for sure, but almost every time that I knew that there were elk in an area and I played it, uh-huh. I've gotten a response.
Right. Cuz I mean, you're talking to an estrus cow. So you're actually tending a cow that's actually in heat. So I mean, it's everything responds to that. Everybody wants to see that, you know? So you're just not doing sounds that make things go away from you. That's my plan in the elk woods. So.
Well, awesome, man.
Yeah.
I hope that you guys catch up with that blacktail.
Yeah, we're wife should be home momentarily, and we're going to go see what we can do.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy the rest of your season. I have some late elk season tags that I'm
very good
helping out on rifle hunts here.
Very good.
But
cool.
I myself am done for elk hunting. I only had that one tag in Oregon this year, so
yeah.
But next year I should have a Wyoming tag, and I probably will go back to Oregon, if not Washington. I want to get a Roosevelt. I got an itch that I need to scratch.
Yeah. I'll probably be in Wyoming as well, so
nice.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Well.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on here, boss.
Absolutely. I'm going to get you back on here, and probably towards the tail end of the season, I want to talk to you a little bit more about SHOT, you know,
okay.
Q and all that stuff. That all your.
Yeah, lots of big things happening. More research has happened. More science is coming out. It's way good. Things are really happening in the SHOT control world.
Cool. Real quick before we jump off, just give the listeners a place where they can go check that out and find out more about you.
Yeah, check out the website is shotiq.com and Joel Turner _shotiq on Instagram. Come see what's happening because it's the cool place to be now. It's actually a good thing to be in control of your shot, and people are starting to realize that. It's the place to be for the science to do it.
Awesome. I prefer to be out of control and just watch.
Okay.
Flinging shit all over the place.
There you go.
All right, man. Well, talk to you soon, and let me know if you get that buck.
All right. Thanks, brother. Be good.
Later.
Take care.